the book of Proverbs in chapter 29. Again, these Proverbs now that we are studying, beginning with chapter 25 on through chapter 29, these are Proverbs that were gathered together by the scribes in the days of Hezekiah. They are Proverbs of Solomon, but it was a portion of the book that was added at a later time. Does not mean that it was not inspired, does not mean that it was an error to have it there, but it simply was a later collection of the same author. We have in the first 25 chapters, 24 chapters really, the Proverbs that Solomon gave them, and likely in book form that he dictated. In these chapters, we have them put together by another. Therefore, you do find a measure of repetition. But as it's been said in the past, repetition is the art of learning. Sometimes we assume too much. Brother Dwayne and I were talking about this just last day or so, that sometimes we assume that folks know more than they do, and sometimes we assume we know more than we do. But nonetheless, repetition is the art of learning. If we say it often enough and loud enough, likely somebody's going to get it after a while. And the Lord seemed to have a way of emphasizing and reemphasizing some things in the Proverbs that are needed. If anybody wants a treatise on life and a book of psychology on life, I would recommend the book of Proverbs. It's been said by another that young people ought to read the book of Proverbs every 30 days. And probably that's true. Most of us ought to do that. It's a book that does give you some real insight, and it'll help you in a lot of human relationships as well as a spiritual or divine relationship with God Himself. It also helps us to confront the issues of life, and it's a very up-to-date book. And I've enjoyed looking through the Proverbs, and I trust that you've been encouraged by it. Let's read these 27 verses now, this 29th chapter. We'll come back and make some comments on it, and then we'll try to take time, give opportunity to ask any questions that might need to be asked or make any comments, not only on this chapter, but what we might have covered thus far. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. The king by judgment establisheth the land, but he that receiveth gifts overthroweth it. A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. In the transgressions of an evil man there is a snare, but the righteous doth sing and rejoice. The righteous consider the cause of the poor, but the wicked regard not to know it. Scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. If a wise man contendeth with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. The bloodthirsty hate the upright, but the just seek his soul. A fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth in end till afterwards. If a ruler hearkeneth to lies, all his servants are wicked. The poor and the deceitful man meet together. The Lord lighteneth both their eyes. The king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. When the wicked are multiplied, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Where there is no vision, the people perish, but he that keepeth the law, happy is he. A servant will not be corrected by words, for though he understand, he will not answer. Seest thou a man that is hasty in his words? there is more hope of a fool than of him. He that delicately bringeth up his servant from a child shall have him become his son at the length. An angry man stirreth up strife, and a furious man aboundeth in transgression. A man's pride shall bring him low, but honor shall uphold the humble in spirit. Whoso is partner with a thief hateth his own soul. He heareth cursing and bewrayeth it not. The fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be safe. Many seek the ruler's favor, but every man's judgment cometh from the Lord. An unjust man is abomination to the just, and he that is upright in the way is abomination to the wicked. Now, in these Proverbs, there are several thoughts that we will want to touch on this morning. And as you can readily see, there are some statements made here that are very relevant to our daily circumstances. The very first verse of chapter 29, one of the most sobering verses I suppose you'll find in the Bible anywhere. He that being often reproved hardeneth his neck shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. I simply entitled this verse like this, The Danger of Refusing Light. The danger of refusing light. It is one thing to live in darkness and not have the Word of God prevalent as we do in the United States of America. It's another thing to live here in this country and to enjoy the benefits that we do, and yet for man to persist in sin and spurn the grace of God. There is a grave danger. I think I can quote a friend of mine that made a statement. I think it'll be understood in the light of this particular verse that we have. A fellow named Norman Toles. He was a preacher, lived up in Weatherford, Texas, same area where I grew up. And, of course, that lends to his credibility because he grew up in Weatherford, Texas. Not quite as much if he'd lived in Aledo, but he was a dear friend of mine. He's home with the Lord now. He's killed outside the city of San Antonio here in a truck accident years ago. But he made a statement one time. He said if he had to go to hell, he would not want to go to hell from Fort Worth, Texas. That sounds like a strange statement to make. But when you begin to think about it, some of the greatest preachers that have ever lived preached in that city. Some of the best Bible schools that have ever existed exist in that city and are in the surrounding areas of that city. And some of probably the greatest revivals that have ever been known have occurred in that city. And in that light, in that vein, then you can understand what he's saying. Because there is a great danger in refusing light. And where the light is prevalent and abounds, to refuse that light, certainly there is a grave danger and a serious danger. You notice that he said, he that being often reproved, one that has great privilege. Now, men are responsible for privilege. Certainly, we can see the relevance of such a statement if we travel into other countries for just a short time. Going to the continent of Africa and Liberia, West Africa in particular, would be common in a lot of the countries and most of the countries of that continent. The preachers there, I found it that if even they had a Bible, such as I have here with me this morning with a concordance in the back and some study helps in it, they considered themselves very fortunate. And yet I have a relatively good library in my home. I have the Bible encyclopedias, the Bible dictionaries, and the concordances that I can use and find great insight into them. And so there are places where there is not the great privilege that is enjoyed, such as this, and we think of it in terms of the church that might exist even in our own nation and in our own cities. There are cities down in South Texas, and this is a burden to my heart. I've always thought that it would be a blessing to this church if we could start a new church every year out of this church. It would be a compliment to this church and be a blessing to a lot of communities. But When we think about mission field, sometimes we always think of foreign soil, but there are cities, townships down across South Texas that do not have a gospel witness in them as far as an established church is concerned. And so there is privilege then in being in a community where a Bible-believing church and preaching church is. And so we see a great privilege here of having light, but then the tragedy of refusing that light. The Bible said here that he being often reproved hardeneth his neck, or those up. Now, the hardening of the neck, this is the idea. Let me describe it for you so that you'll appreciate it. Again, we have to kind of go back to our agrarian days, and this is even prior to my days. I never did see anybody working oxen as such. I can remember my daddy harnessing a team of horses and mules and working them. But the idea of the oxen being trained to the yoke, he would harden his neck and pull away. And that's the picture that we're getting here. Being often reproved and hardeneth his neck, or continues to pull away and refuse the yoke. Now, the yoke that is refused, of course, is the one that Jesus said was his. He said, "Come unto me, all you that labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I'm meek and lowly in heart, and you shall find rest unto your soul. For my yoke is easy," he said, "and my burden is light." It's not a heavy yoke, it's not a hard yoke. And here the man that is hardening his neck is like the oxen that refuses the yoke and continues to rebel against it. "He shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy." It's not any wonder then that the Apostle Paul, the man we know as Paul, known as Saul of Tarsus in his days of persecution, now, saved by the grace of God, would be very, very appreciative and would say, when the Lord saved him, he saved the chiefest of sinners. On the road to Damascus, the apostle Paul was stricken by the light from heaven above the brightness of the noonday sun. And there's a story in that this is divine light. It's more than natural light that is coming to this man, Saul, on the road to Damascus. He's stricken from the beast that he is on. He falls to the ground. And he hears this voice in Hebrew saying to him, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It's hard for thee to kick against the pricks or the goad." And all of the time in this man's life, I think likely from the time he saw Stephen stoned to death, there was that goading constantly, even though he was living in rebellion against the will of God. He possibly thought himself in the will of God for a time, but he rebelled against that goading and direction until that day that God saved him by his marvelous grace. And there he ultimately said, "What do you have me to do?" And he acknowledged him as Lord. Often reproved, God dealing in our lives, and then ultimately there's a sudden destruction, and the Bible said that without remedy. There is a stark reality of a judgment after life and after death. It is appointed unto man once to die, after death the judgment. Very sobering scene described for us by John in the Revelation when he said, "I saw the throne of God." He said, "I saw before that throne then gathered the small and great." It was a throne that was of such magnitude that the heavens and earth would flee away, found no place for them, and then the dead, small and great, standing before God. Ultimately, after that judgment has proceeded, those who were not found written in the book of life were cast into the lake of fire. The Bible said this is the second death, a sudden destruction, and that without remedy, or no reprieve. There is no escape. I heard a message preached one time, a place worse than hell. And I thought, what could that be? And ultimately the preacher, in fashion, led to the scene at the great white throne and the everlasting lake of fire. Place worse than hell. Hell, he pointed out, at least they would be out for a moment, stand in judgment. Now that might be more hell to stand before God in lost in sin than to be in hell itself, but nonetheless there is a little bit of reprieve in the sense to be taken out for a moment, but actually the lake of fire is simply an enlargement of hell itself and the eternal judgment. And we say it is a severe place. I'm aware of the fact that for several hundred years there are churches that have advocated that there was an intermediate place, or in a place of intermediary where folks would go and they could be either bought out or prayed out of that place. And there's just not any such place as purgatory. We do not find it anywhere in the Bible. Actually, it comes out of mythology and the thinking of men's minds, and probably the hopefulness of some men's minds, but the truth and stark reality is that once there is a cutting off, sudden judgment, there is no remedy or there is no escape. The idea that there is always a second hope beyond death is a misnomer, and it is a false hope. Here the Bible said that the man that would be reproved often, harden his neck, shall suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. Well, we didn't intend just to stay on that verse. Let's go on. We notice the rule of the wicked in verse 2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Now, we could go back into the history of the nation of Israel and find these similes here. Had you certainly not rather live under the reign of a David than under the reign of an Ahab? Even the most wicked would not enjoy the benefits under Ahab that they would under David. David certainly had his downfalls in life, but he is an outstanding king. When you talk to a Jewish person today, there are two men that stand out in their minds. One is Moses and the other is David. I mean, if you talk to any Jewish person, they'll know those two names. And they think of David very highly. You don't hear much said of Saul, the first king of Israel, but you certainly hear a lot said about David, the second king of Israel. And to look at his reign, and even though there were severe judgments that he would pronounce, there were also times of great benevolence in his life. And he sought out, remember, in his lifetime, a descendant of Jonathan, Saul's son, that he might show him favor because of the friendship that he had had with Jonathan. And Mephibosheth was found, and he sat at David's table and was provided for. Benevolent king. If you look at Ahab and you find another man that in his selfishness, in his greed, in his lust, he would kill a man for a vineyard. And so we see the difference here and the variance here, the contrast here. And it's true of our own nation, any nation. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. It's just better government when those who have integrity and moral values are in place and in places of authority today. It always disturbs me to hear people in prominent places to speak rather casually of human life and justify the killing even of the innocent unborn and others. And it's a time of great trial and tragedy for a nation. In the days of Ahab, Israel suffered greatly. Apostasy occurred and idolatry was rampant. The people mourned. The end of verse 3, whoso loveth wisdom rejoiceth his father, but he that keepeth company with harlots spendeth his substance. Very self-explanatory verse here. How heartbreaking it is whenever the child does not live right. Every mother and father knows the heartache that have had a wayward child and the terribleness of that particular experience of life. But if that child loves wisdom or basically follows the path that leads to God, then they rejoice the heart of the father. The king by judgment establishes the land, but he that receiveth gifts overthroweth it. Let me say that one of the great tragedies of our day that exist, and I'll be fair politically this morning, it occurs in both parties. There are men that actually in the days of, I'm trying to think of who the opponents were in that, but anyway, prominent Republicans and Democrats running, it was established by fact that in both of those camps, the counselors or the men that were leaders in those campaigns, it's probably about an equal number in both that had ultimately held public office and at that time were standing in representation of foreign powers in the area of marketing in this country. And it seems as though men would put themselves in a place to learn the ins and outs of Washington, and after about 6 years of experience, 7 years of experience, then they would immediately align themselves with foreign governments to market their products in this country. And they do it really for gain. It's money. Very high paid people. And it's actually the same as receiving gifts. It overthroweth the land. It's a destruction to this land. If you ask me, do I believe in guarding our markets, I sure do. I think that we certainly need to protect our own markets, and there's times I think we best take care of ourselves as a nation. Now, I don't think we ought to minimize the preaching of the gospel to other nations, but there are times that when we open our doors, and especially when men will do this, not for any gain except wealth. Now, it's always amazed me that people are willing to literally sacrifice this nation for their own gain, but when this nation falls, they'll go with it, and they don't seem to understand that. But you see what this man is saying here, the king by judgment establishes the land, or by right and consideration and right judgment will build a land, but if he just receives gifts, he'll overthrow it. A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. And certainly that's true. If you pump somebody up beyond their measure, then they're set up for a fall. That's pretty self-explanatory. In the transgression of an evil man, there is a snare, but the righteous doth sing and rejoice. Certainly we are aware again of the end of life itself, and the righteous can stand and rejoice and sing in the face of adversity, where, on the contrary, there's a snare to the way of the wicked. Ultimately, there's an end and a judgment to face. The righteous considereth the cause of the poor, but the wicked regard not to know it. There are some things that are just absolutely ignored. And again, I think that we have seen in our own land, and I use our country since we're here, and we are very conscious of the affairs of our country. I think it's tragic that we have only men of extreme means that govern this land that do not even really realize what it is to have to live on a very low and a fixed income. I remember whenever the dome was in question, and I still think it's a fiasco, and I think it'll prove to be in time to come. But there's one man said, well, it won't cost anybody over probably $15 a year to pay that tax. But I've seen the time that $15 is bigger than a wagon wheel. And there are people that live in this city today that that's still true. I mean, whenever you're trying to raise a family of five or six or seven or eight on minimum wage today, $15 is a lot of money. And I say all that to say this, that there needs to be a consideration of where folks really are and where they live. It's a whole lot easier for a man of an income of $100,000 or $200,000 to pay his taxes normally than it is for a person of lesser income. Just by virtue of the fact that there'll be more left in the long run to the one who has the higher income. So I don't denounce those who are able to make money. That's not the issue. But I think it would be well if some who have to live in a real world were in places of responsibility when decisions are made. And the righteous consider the cause of the poor, but the wicked regard not to know it, or they simply ignore some things. Sometimes there are methods of appeasement that are made. Sometimes there are grants that are made from our government simply to appease. And it's done in the guise of promoting those who are in poverty, but it's not so. And so sometimes the wicked disregard not to know the case of the poor of the land. And scornful men bring a city into a snare, but wise men turn away wrath. You see the contrast, and this is a matter of poetry here. And sometimes it's a poetry of contrast, statements of contrast in poetry. Sometimes there's a statement made, and there's an enlargement on that statement in the second portion of the statement. Sometimes it's a contrast made. This is a point of contrast here. Wise men turn away wrath, or they endeavor to deliver a city. I think in verse 9 is a very precious statement, probably one we'll take to heart. If a wise man contend with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. There's just no reasoning with a fool. I mean, that's a fact of life. We have a saying where I grew up, you're whistling in the wind to try to reason with a fool. And he said it makes no difference whether it's you become enraged or whether you laugh about it. It's still the end is the same. There's not anything accomplished. I think the Lord had the same thing in mind. He said that sometimes you don't cast even the pearl before swine. Now, that does not mean we ought not endeavor to share the gospel with somebody. But if there's somebody who persistently refuses the gospel and maligns and mocks the gospel, then there comes a time simply to walk away and silently leave him alone, because there's no reasoning with a fool. All right. We'll go on and we'll look at some other verses here. We've got just a moment or two. And the bloodthirsty hate the upright, and that's true. You can look at Cain and Abel, know what that means. But the upright himself will seek the soul even of the wicked. A fool loveth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards. Again, I have to revert back to my younger days in childhood, and there was a statement that my brother picked up somewhere, and he said, I'd rather stand around in silence and they let them think I'm stupid than to open my mouth and let them know it. Basically, that's the thought that we have here. Sometimes it's best just not to speak all of our mind, because sometimes that's all we have. And they find out soon that we're very shallow in our mind. So a fool loveth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in until afterwards. Speak in appropriate time. If a ruler hearkens to the lies, all his servants are wicked. I made the statement that if a man is not as capable, if he'll surround himself with good men, he can be successful. But if he will yield to lies, and there were men that did this, and after the death of Solomon, his son that was to take the throne, he listened to some lies, and it cost him dearly. And so we find that it is well to surround ourselves with those that are men. If a man, he hearkens to lies, he'll surround himself, or he'll have servants that are wicked. The poor and the deceitful man meet together, the Lord lighteneth both their eyes. Certainly we see a statement here that it makes no difference whether the poor man and the deceitful man or the wicked man, when they come together, it's the Lord who has to enlighten both eyes or open their minds. Men do not today understand spiritual things without the enabling of the Spirit of God. The king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. There is time for correction and instruction in a child's life. It's a demonstration of great love. And I'm not talking about child abuse, and I'm talking about beating, but there certainly it's very appropriate to train up a child in the way that he ought to go, and it does produce blessed results. Then when the wicked are multiplied, transgression increaseth, but the righteous shall see their fall. Thank God. This world, as we see it today, will one day fall, and we'll see righteousness established. You wonder why it seems that wickedness abounds today. There's more wicked people around. In my days, the population of this nation was not nearly as much as it is today, and you're aware of that. But as population increases, wicked increases, and wickedness increases when the wicked are increased. It is simply a matter of mathematics. The more wicked people you have around, the more mischief goes on. Correct thy son, and he shall give thee rest, or delight, yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Where there is no vision, the people perish. And certainly that is true. Now this idea of a vision has been preached sometimes from this text, that we need a vision of a perishing world, but the vision is actually spiritual enlightenment, where there is no spirituality in a nation, the people perish. And tragically today, I think we're seeing a nation perish because there is not a reverence of God in this land. And we say what we will, and it can be stricken from history, but the history of this nation is that it was a people that were God-fearing, that came and forged the way and founded this nation. They were looking for, by and large, a place of security and safety from persecution when they came here. And there was certainly an acknowledgement of God in the lives of most of the early leaders of this land, and all of the leaders of this land, for that matter. I don't know of an atheist that was in any of the group of the founding fathers. Most of the men were at least deists. They certainly believed in God. And therefore, there was some spiritual insight, but the people perish whenever there is no spiritual enlightenment and discernment. He that keepeth the law, happy is he, or the one that will yield himself to the law of God. One of the tragedies of our land, I read it in the paper, heard it on news not too long ago, in the courthouse, I think it was in South Carolina, made them remove the Ten Commandments from the courthouse because it might prejudice a juror against somebody. Tragedy upon tragedy in a land that would turn its back on the Word of God. Let me just pick one more thought that I want to. The other verses we'll have to leave because we're running out of time. In verse 26, it said, "Many seek the ruler's favor, but every man's judgment cometh from the Lord." Now men move as though in a chess game, moving here and moving there to counteract moves to find the favor of men. But irregardless of what we do in this life, everyone will have to face God. The ultimate end is we ought to please God rather than man.